Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
So we started this series 2 weeks ago that kind of feels like a messed up infomercial, you know, like five easy ways to wreck your life. And so since it kind of feels like an infomercial, we decided to have some incredible products, not that we're selling, but that we are giving away to one lucky winner. How can you win, you're asking? The answer is by filling out a connection card. We're going to enter all the connection cards we get from the last 2 weeks, today and next week, into a drawing. One person's name is going to be pulled, and we're going to give them all the prizes on the fifth and last week of the series, 2 weeks from today. What might you win? Let's take a look. We've already seen the sauna pants, the pajama jeans, the Justin Bieber singing toothbrush. But what about this for the guys? It's like a special night on the town doing something kind of fancy. The inflatable toupee. That's right. The inflatable toupee could be yours. And if that's not enough inflatable accessories for you, there is the inflatable beard of bees. Because, well, you know. Because I don't know. But you know. So there you go. You can win all those prizes. It's going to be awesome. Well, as we've seen the last 2 weeks, this is not really an infomercial. What we're doing is we're talking about five easy ways to wreck your life as displayed by a guy named King Solomon. King Solomon was a king about 3,000 years ago. We read about his life in the Bible, and he started out great. He became king at an early age. God gave him wisdom. He had incredible wisdom. He wrote a book of the Bible called Proverbs, which is just like a book full of great wisdom for living your life. And then the wheels started coming off. Solomon made a series of bad decisions that wrecked his life, ruined his family, destroyed his nation. They never recovered. And so we've been looking at some of the ways he wrecked his life so that we can find out how we shouldn't wreck our lives. Let's do a quick review. 2 weeks ago, we learned the first way that Solomon says he wrecked his life, which was by letting pleasure guide you. So like, pursue happiness at any cost. Let pleasure become the god you worship. I heard about a doctor, and he was driving down the road when he spotted one of his patients, a 92-year-old man, jogging down the street with this much younger, attractive-looking lady and a beer in his hand. Doctor pulled over, jumped out of his car. He said, what are you doing? And the guy said, what? What you told me. You said, get a bad hot mama and be cheerful. And doctor said, no, I told you, you have a bad heart murmur. Be careful. I got a boo there? Some people are all about chasing happiness, but what we learned together, not just from Solomon, but from research that proves it, is that happy people don't chase after happiness. They chase after God, and happiness catches them. Last week, we learned a second way to wreck your life, which is to let success consume you. Let success consume you. You know, a lot of people just become obsessed with making it to the top, and so like they'll run over anyone who gets in their way. They will work long hours. They'll neglect the most important relationships in their lives and neglect God if necessary, if that's what it takes. They embrace stress and anxiety as just being normal for, you know, kind of fast-paced movers and shakers. They let titles and possessions and money and trophies define who they are. And if you do that, that's a great way to wreck your life. And what we learned last week is that we need to be a lot more concerned with who we're becoming than with what we're achieving. That I need to care a lot more about what kind of person I am than what I accomplish. All right? So today we're going to look at the third way from Solomon to wreck your life. So here's the thing with Solomon. He was smart. He was powerful. He was famous. He was handsome. The Bible doesn't actually say he was handsome, but it seems like most smart, powerful, famous people are handsome. That's why I hate them. So he is probably handsome, I don't know. But even despite being smart and powerful and famous, Solomon was lonely. He was lonely. Now, it's interesting because 2 weeks ago we learned that he had check this, 700 wives and 300 mistresses. And so you might ask, well, how would like 1,000 women, not to mention all the other employees and everything in the palace, how could he be lonely? But I think all of us know the answer to that question. But because we've all had times in life where we had a lot of people around, but still felt lonely. See, what we need to not feel lonely is not people around, it's to feel connected. Right? And you can have all kinds of contacts in your network, and you can have like thousands of friends on Facebook and not really be connected to anyone. Solomon became incredibly successful. He had lots of people around, but he was still lonely. And in his journal, which we have in the Bible as the book of Ecclesiastes, that's what we're kind of walking through in this series, he says, just don't do what I did. Don't make the same mistake. Don't have fun and pursue success at the expense of something so much more important, which is other people, relationships. Don't be lonely like I did and wreck your life like I did. So if you really want to wreck your life, step number three, isolate yourself. Isolate yourself. Be busy, but be alone. Have thousands of friends on Facebook, but no one that you can really talk to. Be in demand, but don't let people truly know you. If you want to wreck your life, just go years without meaningful relationships. Isolate yourself. Now, here's what's amazing with this one. I think we all know this. Like last 2 weeks, I think probably we were some like, huh, I've never known that. I've never thought about that. But I think we all know this. I think we probably, I'm guessing, all agree with this. But still, we kind of make excuses, right? But we know it. And not only do we know it just from like self-experience, but like it's a proven fact. It is a proven fact. There's been tons of research that shows that people who have strong support systems are far healthier in every way than people who don't. One study proved that people who have bad health habits, that smoking, poor nutrition, obesity, abuse alcohol, but strong social ties live significantly longer than people who have great health habits but live isolated lives. In other words, it's better to eat Twinkies with good friends than to eat broccoli alone, right? It's true. There was another study in the Journal of the American Medical Association, and what they did was they infected hundreds of people with the virus that produces the common cold, and they discovered that people who have strong emotional connections in life did 4 times better fighting off illness than those who were living isolated lives. These people were less susceptible to colds. They had less of the virus in their body, and they produced significantly less mucus than relationally isolated people. I'm not making this up. This means that they produce less mucus, which means it's literally true that unfriendly people are snottier than friendly people. It's a scientific fact. The truth is, everything we do is affected by the amount and especially by the quality of friendships that we have, the level of connectedness we have in our lives. And again, I'm guessing that we would all go, I know that. I believe that. Still, at the same time, we make excuses, right? It's like, yeah, but I'm too busy. I know that's true, but I've tried, and it doesn't seem like anyone else really wants to like have deep friendships. I know that's true, but no one seems to really want to know me anyway. I know that's true, but... So here's what we'll do. We'll look at some of our excuses, but first, let's see what Solomon says. He's very much doing research of his own on different ways to live your life and discovering what wrecks your life. And so let's see his research on living a lonely life. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, if you have a Bible, you can turn there. If you don't have a Bible, it's not an issue. We're going to put all the verses on the screen for you. If you don't own a Bible, we would love to give one to you today. Back at the Velcro Bar, which is our connecting place, we have Bibles that we give away for free. We'd love to give one to you. So Ecclesiastes chapter 4, starting in verse 7. Solomon writes, "Again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. There was a man, all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling? He asks. And what am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless, a miserable business. And so he's like, I look around and I see all the lonely people, right? He starts out kind of singing Eleanor Rigby, and he says, you know, these people are alone and they have no real connection. They might have a few acquaintances, maybe a lot, but they don't have any real friends. They're just like me. They're like working obsessively late into the night, never stopping to ask the question, why am I working so hard? And if I get all this stuff, who am I going to enjoy it with? Man, I'm lonely. And so here's the conclusion of this kind of piece of research he does, starting in verse 9. He says, two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. So I'm going to come back to that passage and kind of walk through it and see what we can get out of it for our lives. But first, what he's saying here is what contemporary studies have proved time and time again. We flourish when we live our lives connected to God and other people. And our souls, they just kind of shrivel up and die when we live life alone. The truth is, life is better when we live it together. It reminds me of an old story about an out-of-towner who accidentally drove his car into a deep ditch on the side of the road. Well, he's standing there, he's stranded, doesn't know what to do, when luckily a farmer comes by with his big horse named Benny. Benny. And so the man asked for help. The farmer said, sure, I can help you. And he hitched Benny up to the man's car. And then the farmer yelled, pull, Nelly, pull. And the horse, Benny, didn't move. He just stood there. And then the farmer yelled, come on, Ranger, pull, pull. Benny just stood there. And then the farmer said, okay, Fred, it's time to pull, pull. The horse, Benny, just stood there. And then the farmer kind of nonchalantly said, okay, Benny, pull. And Benny pulls the car right out of the ditch. Well, the man was very appreciative, but he couldn't understand what had just happened. And so he asked the farmer, he said, thank you, but I can't understand. Why did you call your horse by the wrong name three times? And the farmer said, oh, no, Benny is blind. And if he thought he was the only horse pulling, he never would have even done it. See, that's the kind of story that you typically get in sermons. I don't typically do those kinds. I call them pastor jokes. Pastor jokes are just like normal jokes. They're just not quite as funny. So there you go. You got one of those today. There was a news story on TV one night, true story, about a 102-year-old man, 102 years old, who still practices medicine, keeps office hours 5 days a week. He is one of the leaders in the field of arthritis in the country. He still sits on the board of the Arthritis Research Foundation. He still plays the violin every day with like amazing dexterity. And the interview asked him, like, what is the key to living a long, healthy life? And this 102-year-old man laughs and he says, I can tell you this, exercise is vastly overrated. Which I say, amen. And then his wife of 70 years comes walking in the room, and he smiled and said, find someone to love and give your life away to that person. God designed it so life is better when we live it together. So let's break down the verses that we looked at a minute ago and see what we can learn. So verses 9 and 10 again. Psalmist says, two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Now, when I read those verses, I think back to the old movie Forrest Gump, and there's the scene where they're at war in Vietnam, and it's raining, and it's become like totally messy, and Bubba says to Forrest, let's put our backs together. I'll lean on you, and you lean on me, and that way we don't have to sleep with our heads in the mud. And it's two are better than one. Like when you have somebody else, you can support each other. And we see this all the time. Maybe not in our lives, but and again, these are all like proven facts or research. People struggling to overcome an addiction typically can't do it until they join a group. People who want to lose weight and get healthy are far more successful when they are not doing it alone. People who set personal goals and really want to achieve them are far more effective in actually doing so when they get coaching and mentoring from someone and have someone else to hold them accountable. Just the way God designed life. Life is better when we live it together. Like, your brain, your soul, your body respond to relationships. Relationships give us fuel. They motivate us. They give us sustaining power. And again, it's been proven scientifically over and over again. So one of the things they've proven, it's really interesting, is like your brain chemistry actually changes when you have people supporting you. Like the chemistry that's going on in your brain changes. So here's one study they did. They put a monkey all by itself in a cage, and they made it like a highly stressful situation. And so they put on like loud flashing lights and loud sounds and Lady Gaga music. It was like high stress situation. And then they monitored the stress hormones that were produced in that monkey. Then they did the experiment again, but same circumstances, loud music and lights and everything, but with two monkeys in a cage. And what they discovered is that the stress hormones produced are only half as much because this monkey had a buddy with him. And the lesson for us is very obvious. You need to get a pet monkey, like right away. Like that's the deal right there. The Bible just repeatedly talks about our need for relationships and how we should do life in those relationships. So, like in the New Testament of the Bible, the New Testament is the part after Jesus comes. There's verses that say things like, weep with those who weep, and rejoice with those who rejoice. Like you need to have people to celebrate with and to cry with. There's a verse that says, encourage one another. Another verse says, accept one another. There's another verse that says, carry one another's burdens. So that phrase, one another, about living life with someone else or with some other people, it appears 57 times in the New Testament alone, one another. Like, God designed us to live one another lives. We are one another beings. And that's why Solomon says, man, two are better than one. Next, he writes in verse 11, he says, also, if two lie down together, they'll keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? I think maybe if we were to rewrite that verse for like today's culture, we might say, two can face swap together on Snapchat, but how can one face swap alone? Right? If you have no friends, you have no one to face swap with. Well, you can face swap, but you have to resort to face swapping with pictures of historical figures, and that is a very sad life. Here's me with Abraham Lincoln. This is me face swap with Babe Ruth. Here's me with Gandhi. And last and best, here's me with Ella Fitzgerald. Yeah, there you go. Sad life, right? Solomon says, no, you need two. Now, what he says is, he didn't say face swap. He says, if two lie down together, he's not speaking literally about like getting into bed together. He's speaking metaphorically about the importance of just the warmth that friendship brings, the importance of having encouragement. He's saying, listen, when life gets cold, when you get exposed to the elements of life, when storms hit, when you feel vulnerable, man, that's when you need a friend, right? Like on the first day of school, man, it is far better to walk in with a friend. When you go into the hospital, it's far better to walk in with a friend. When you go into that courtroom, it's far better to walk in with a friend. We are a gift to each other. Two are better than one. There is warmth and encouragement and joy that we find in authentic connectedness. And then Solomon concludes his thoughts with verse 12. He says, though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. I think what he's saying is, listen, you can't do life right on your own. You need a true friend. And what's even better is if you have two of them. And that's the idea, I think, of like two is good, but like a quarter, three strands, that's awesome. And if you have two kind of deep friendships, well, then if one doesn't answer the phone, maybe the other one will. If one doesn't have good wisdom to offer you, maybe the other one does. If one moves away, well, you still got another one who's close by. Life is better when we do it together. And having more than one person in life to do life with, that's just a really good move. So let me ask you, how isolated are you? So anyway, I'm gonna give you a little quiz just to help you maybe try to discern how isolated you really are, okay? Here's the first question. When something goes wrong in life, do you have at least one friend, two would be better, who you can easily talk about all of it with? Do you have a friend, two would be better, who you could show up at their house and just drop by, walk in, without them going, "This is weird. Why did you show up at my house? Why are you here?" Do you have a couple drop-in friends? Is there a person, two would be better, who could accurately name your greatest fears and temptations? Do you have a friend or two who you feel like you can totally, completely trust their confidentiality? Any secret? If you can't say yes to most or all those questions, I would say that you're living an isolated life. And I would say you need to be careful, because living an isolated life is a way to wreck your life. And so I would love to encourage you, invite you to get into one of our Verve groups. And we call them microgroups because they're kind of small. And they are like typically 4 to 6 people who meet once a week, 4 guys or 4 ladies, and usually for about an hour, typically in public places, Starbucks or something like that. And you'll learn a little bit about God. You might do a little bit of a Bible study, but the main idea is just to share life together, that you'll have a few people who know you and you know them, and who love you and you love them, and you can encourage each other. And when you need accountability, you can ask for it. And we all need that. I've got that. I'm meeting with mine tomorrow morning. I need that. I think you need that. And you can find out more. You could sign up today at the Velcro Bar or online at our website. If you're in one, or maybe you have some other kind of group like that that you meet with, are you vulnerable with that group? It's easy to be in one of those groups and every week, how's your life? I'm good. Good week. Right? And you never get past the surface. Maybe something to become a little bit more vulnerable. Maybe something you could do this week to take a step in the right direction is invite somebody from that group or somebody else who kind of God puts on your heart out for coffee or lunch, just to take a first step. You don't have to say, let's become best friends and tell each other everything, but just to take the first step towards maybe deepening your relationship a little bit. You know? Listen, isolation, it's not going to kill you quickly, but it will kill you. It will wreck your life. So don't live an isolated life. And again, I think we all know that. I'm guessing probably just about all of us say, yeah, you're right. I get that. I agree with that. But we make excuses, right? So let's walk through some of the excuses that we make and see maybe if there are some answers for those. First excuse is I'm an introvert. I just feel more comfortable alone. I like being alone. If that's what you're thinking, let me say, I completely get it. I am a total introvert. It's a little hard to tell when I'm up on stage, but if you knew me, you'd know, like, I love being alone. I'm completely an introvert. Like, when I'm alone, it gives me energy, and when I'm with other people, it drains my energy. There was a movie I saw a couple years ago, and it was just like this really deep, philosophical kind of movie. And not one that I typically would have gone and seen, but there was this one particular scene in it that I thought it spoke profoundly, poignantly to the despair that we feel when we live life alone. I don't know, you probably didn't see it. It was a movie starring Amy Adams and Miss Piggy and Kermit the Frog. Here's a scene from it.
Welcome. How many in your party? Two?
No, just the one.
All right, party of one, follow me.
I look around, and once again I'm on my own. My man in here, he's gone and done me wrong. No one's gonna stop this girl from having fun. I throw my hands up high and have a party for one. I'm having a me party, a party by myself.
Sit around by myself and wait for you. Haven't you heard? One is the new two. I'm gonna make a scene. I'm gonna make a fuss. Tonight I'm gonna celebrate with just the one of us. I'm having a big party.
Haven't I seen you here before?
A big party.
I'm the last one on the dance floor.
Big party.
A party just for one.
Okay, it wasn't a deep philosophical movie, but I took my kids to see that back in 2011, and it's funny because the idea of that scene is that Amy Adams' character and Miss Piggy, like, their guys aren't around, their relationships are falling apart, and so, like, they're so depressed that they're alone that they're trying to lift up their own spirits by having a me party. But when I watched that scene, I was like, I love me parties. Like, I don't get it. Me parties are awesome. Like, on my birthday, I throw myself surprise me parties. Like, I love me parties. And so if you're thinking, like, I'm an introvert, I get it. I like being alone. I think one of the reasons that we like being alone is because, well, that way I'm in charge. You know, like I get to control everything. And so some of us would be like, well, you know what? I'm an introvert. But here's the problem. When we choose to live life in isolation, we're more likely to give in to temptation and discouragement. We're more likely to become self-absorbed people. We're more likely to spend all of our money in only selfish ways. And not only are we in more danger for our lives when we live in isolation, but also other people who God intended to love through us get cheated of that. People who isolate themselves, like what they do is they cheat everyone else out of the gift that they are supposed to be to those people. And so if your excuse is, I'm an introvert, I get that. I understand that. And you do need time alone. But you also need to spend some time with other people. Second excuse for not doing this, some people would say, I'm good because I'm an extrovert. Like, I'm good. Listen, just because you're around a lot of people does not mean that you have a lot of close friends. Just because you talk a lot doesn't mean you say a lot. And it definitely doesn't mean that you listen a lot either. So, yes, you're an extrovert. But how many people really know you? How many people really know you? Like, how many people could tell us what you, they wouldn't tell us, but could tell us what you struggle with, what your temptations are, the fears that you wrestle with in life. And if the answer is no one or not many, then what you are is an isolated extrovert. I think that there are lots of isolated extroverts who, like, they're the life of the party. They'll tell you they're the life of the party, but they never kind of take down their external wall and let other people in. And if you're an extrovert, and you're an isolated extrovert, man, you need to figure out how to do that. A third excuse for not doing this is, listen, I've tried, but, like, no one else wants to be friends. Like, it doesn't seem like anyone else is interested. I've tried. Here's what I think. I think one of our biggest problems with this is that we have, like, very high standards for who we'll be friends with. Like, if this person isn't popular enough or good-looking enough, if they don't seem to have enough to offer me, I kind of move on. Right? If this person doesn't respond to things the way I do and have my same views and immediately text back when I text them and bring food when they come over and like the kind of movies I like, we move on. If this person just gives out too many high fives to people or they're just too huggy or every time I walk in a room, they're like, yeah, boy, we move on. Here's the truth. That person you're thinking of, you're right. That person is not a perfect person and would not be a perfect friend. And what that means is they're just like you. Right? You are not going to find a perfect friend, and no one is going to find a perfect friend in you. Right? They're not. And so here's my advice. You ready? Settle. Settle. It's not great advice for getting married, but it's really good advice for friends. Like if you meet somebody and you start getting to know them and you think, they'd probably be a pretty good friend, that's pretty good enough. That's pretty good enough. Fourth excuse for not getting connected in real friendships, the last one I'll mention, I know there's more, is I'm a guy, right? And so we're like, listen, I don't need other people because I'm a dude. Like I could make fire. Okay, I can't really make fire, but if I lived on an island by myself, I could make fire. And I could live on an island by myself because I'm a dude. And so I don't need close friends. That's the way a lot of guys are. Men tend to have few friendships. They tend to kind of keep their walls up and struggle to let their guard down and be real with people. They don't want to show their vulnerability. And that's great. Like, that is a great plan for wrecking your life. Awesome plan if you want to wreck your life. So listen, guys, I'm not talking about, like, staring deeply into each other's eyes over tea and crumpets. Right? I'm not talking about knitting together. I'm not talking about, hey, let's go see a romantic comedy together, right? I'm talking about, like, just having a person or two who you do life side by side with, right? Like someone who you know that you can count on them, and they know that they can count on you. And you can do that, guys. You can do that. And we need to listen to Solomon. He says, listen, I isolated myself and it left me lonely and it was a part of me wrecking my life. Don't do what I did. If you were here 2 weeks ago, I know some of you weren't, but if you were here 2 weeks ago, we started the series by actually looking at the end of his diary, his journal, and then we're kind of going back through it. But the end of it, I don't know if you remember kind of his conclusion of his life. Like at the end of his life, looking at his life and realizing this, he said, here's what life is all about, turns out. Know and follow your creator. Right? That's what life is about. And your creator created you to live in community. First and foremost with him, and then also with other people. Life is better when we live it together. Let's pray for that. Let's pray. God, what a gracious God you are. So here's my guess. I can speak for myself. I have wrecked my life in so many ways. I have messed up so many times. And I'm not even just talking about like the distant past. And like I seem to do it all the time. And I'm going to venture the guess that probably all of us have made some big mistakes, have screwed up. And you love us anyway. You love us unconditionally. And you set this course for our life. You give us these truths in the Bible through people like Solomon where you're trying to help us to live a life where we're not going to continue to damage ourselves and the people we care about. God, would you give us the wisdom to listen to your wisdom and the courage to apply it? God, we need to do life with others, and we have our excuses. But my prayer is that today we would break through those excuses, overcome those obstacles, and make the decision, I am going to live in community. I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'll get in a micro group. With great fear and trembling this week in my micro group, I'll be vulnerable and share something that I struggle with or a temptation I can't seem to overcome. I'm going to ask somebody to go out for lunch and just take a next step towards having someone I can really talk to. Would you help us to do what we need to do to live life in community, because that's what it's all about. We pray all this in your name. Amen.